In this next segment, we are talking to Pedro Fernandez, who has been on the show a few times on Black Op Radio. I met him in San Francisco at one of the conferences, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Hello, Pedro.
The godfather of the JFK movement right now. You are the guy. I'm talking about Mr. Lionel Senek. Pleasure to be here, sir.
Good. I wanted to offer just some, you know, short amount of time to each guest that I've had on over the years, as this is our 1,000th show, 20 years in the making, I've been calling it for everyone. And I know that you're very positive about that, so I would just ask you maybe for some comments about Black Op Radio and what you see in research coming up.
Well, let me start off with 50 reasons for 50 years. I thought that was probably something that should have won Emmys or some kind of awards, and somehow it just got ignored by the mainstream media, and shame on them for that, because it was probably one of the best productions that's ever been put forth. Black Op Radio, what can I say? It's my weekly I'm sort of hooked on it. It's sort of like a heroin habit, but it's a good thing. Every Thursday night around 6 o'clock, 6:30 out here on the West Coast, it's time to listen to Len and whoever he happens to have on the air. Now, of course, I've been at this a long time. I was a first minute researcher when my principal came in to my class in 1963. I was in the first grade and said, the president had been killed. I wanted to know why. And she said he was shot with a gun. So the only gunshots I had ever seen in my life on TV were like cowboys and Indians. So I thought that maybe somebody shot him like on the street, cowboys and Indian style. And of course, as you get into the subject and as you grow and as you mature, you read books like 4 Days by UPI that sort of started it. And then I sort of got hooked on Rush to Judgment and things like that. So before you know it, I was hooked, and I was hooked hard. I just couldn't believe it because, you know, when you look at the case as a whole, that magic bullet, I know that's what brought Len into the game. That's like beyond, you really got to be somewhere in another planet to try to believe that one, okay? And the bullet itself doesn't match the rifle, so therefore that's sort of like history. Mr. Oswald, or Lee Harvey Oswald, was James Wolcott of the CIA. He was a CIA payroll officer, said in 1978 before the House Assassinations Committee that Oswald was a paid agent of the CIA, a paid operative. And then, of course, you got J. Lee Rankin saying in that Warren Commission memo that they had his CIA payroll number. So all this stuff has been out there for years. And it just blows my mind that nobody wants to pick it up. I think that the crux of the case was broken. Jack White told me this about 25 years ago. He said, listen, because I'm going to die soon. And he didn't die for another 10 years. Because I'm going to die soon. He goes, the guy you need to keep your money on is John Armstrong. I said, what do you mean? He goes, he's the guy. He's the only guy that's got money. He can't be influenced by anybody. He's got his own money. He can't be influenced. He goes, and he's anal. He goes, he's more anal than I am. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, listen, he crosses every T and dots every I, not once, but twice. So that sort of got me into the Harvey and Lee book and started reading that and started realizing, you know, this sort of answers a lot of questions. I mean, Harvey getting on the bus and then getting off the bus and getting in the cab, William Whaley's cab, and taking it over there to Beckley Street there and out in Oak Cliff. And then, of course, you've got Lee Oswald coming down the grass and getting into a Rambler car, a Rambler station wagon that was witnessed by Roger Craig. Now, you can't have it both ways. Either there is a Harvey and a Lee, or there isn't. And I think that Mr. Armstrong has proved beyond a reasonably, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that two of these guys existed. In fact, I can't think of his name right now, but he wrote this big, long book in Dallas about the Tibbet killing. And he spent 25 or 30 years on it. And then he had to admit afterwards that John Armstrong was right. He spent 35 years writing a book that, you know, Armstrong sort of like took a bow and arrow and shot an arrow through.
Yeah, are you thinking Joe McBride?
Mr. McBride, exactly. I saw. You know what? I will say this. Of all the authors that I've ever come in contact with, he is one of the most honest guys I've ever met in my life, because when he was wrong, he copped to it. All these other guys, like, you know, you try to get Josiah Thompson to admit the Zapruder film is a cartoon, and he goes berserk. You try to get Robert Groden to admit that the film is a hoax, that it's a fraud, that there's no way in the world, that there is absolutely no way in the world that film is 100% real. And I would stake my life on that. I wouldn't stake my life on too many things, but I would stake my life on that, okay? But then again, you know, you've got Robert Groden. That's been his pet peeve his baby since, what, in the 1970s. So he can't come out and say that that film's a fake because it makes him look bad. And you and I know, Len, that film's got more flaws in it than you can ever imagine. I mean, the shadows on the side of the car, sometimes the car's dull on one side, sometimes it's shiny. I mean, the bodies are moving all over the place. And then you've got people in the middle of the street that are bigger, people in the middle of the street that are 15 feet further than the car from the camera, and they're bigger than the people in the car. Len, I showed you that picture.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, there's a lot of anomalies in the film, I'll say that. You know,
yeah.
Just
but anyway. People.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the film thing. But I do want to get into the fact that I've met some wonderful people in this industry, and I call it an industry. I call it the JFK assassination industry. We're a tight group, and you know, I've been together with these guys since 93. We got together for the 30th anniversary in Dallas, Texas, and it sort of kept took on from there. But I want to mention some of the people that have passed on, and these guys were all stars. These guys were like all pros if there were football teams in the JFK assassination community. Larry Howard and Larry Ray Harris. First, Larry Howard. He and Harris both ran the JFK Assassination Center in Dallas, and that was about a block and a quarter. I think it was on the corner of Main Street in Houston, the JFK Center, and it ran counterculture to the JFK 6th floor museum, which stops at frame 312 or frame 311 of the Zapruder film. In other words, you don't see anything past that as far as JFK getting shot, which way his head goes, which way the blood brain banner goes, none of that kind of good stuff, okay? But Larry Ray Harris and Larry Howard, you know, they were both part of the Roscoe White thing. And Roscoe White was a cop in Dallas, Texas, who was hired about a month and a half before the assassination. He was also a Marine, and he was stationed with Lee Harvey Oswald in Japan. And if my memory serves me correct, there's a picture of Lee Harvey Oswald with Mr. Roscoe White in the background, or Roscoe White's in the background and Lee Harvey Oswald in the foreground. But the bottom line is these guys had some relationships together. Okay, so this guy becomes a Dallas policeman. He works for the photographic department, and then we find out it's his body in the pictures. I mean, the broken wrist that he had from that accident in the army, that big old lump on his arm, the fact that his chin is shaped the way it is, Oswald's chin is shaped totally different. And what did Oswald say when Captain Fritz showed him those pictures? Hey, that's not me. They took somebody else's head and put it on somebody else's body. That's not me. I mean, he was adamant from the start. He knew exactly what the game was.
That's a very good observation. I don't want to go too long right now. I'm glad to have you on again if you want to go in depth in all these things. But I just want, you know, get an overview of where you think maybe, are you optimistic about the future? Are you think we're going to solve this? What's your thoughts?
It's been solved. I mean, come on. I mean, it's been solved. I mean, I think Armstrong put this to bed a while back. If you've got Harvey and you've got Lee, and you've got Harvey going over to Russia, and you've got Lee working here in the United States and hanging out with guys that were on Barney Miller's TV show and things like that. So you've got Lee here, you've got Harvey over there. I mean, the mafia cannot put together Harvey and Lee. I mean, they can't do it. I mean, they can't. I mean, no matter what you want to do, Jam Giancana can't make this guy defect and go to Russia and all this kind of, or allegedly defect and go to Russia. And, you know, you look at the whole thing involving Oswald, the fact that broad, Marina Oswald, his old lady, and I was there in 1993 when Mark Lane interviewed her at the Dallas conference. A bunch of guys interviewed her, four or five guys. Anyway, I think she was KGB. I mean, she met with the first defector and the third defector when the defector program started rocking and rolling there in the late 1950s. So the fact that she met one guy in Minsk, I think, and one guy in Moscow, come on, man. I mean, where's a little 17-year-old scallop or a 17-year-old girl, 18-year-old girl get bus fare or even airfare to fly across the country?
You make some good points. You make some good points.
As far as the research, you know, I beat up Posner in that debate, right? You know, Posner and those guys, when I debated Gerald Posner on, I think it was the Gene Rogers show or something like that, I was kicking the shit out of him, just beating his ass. Uh-huh. And they cut my phone off. They go, we can't hear Pedro. Something must have happened. And I'm talking. And they're like, yeah, anyway. As far as the future is concerned, I think that young man that you had on the show a few weeks ago that has a 1,000-page book available, that's free. I can't think of his name right now. It slips my mind. But he was excellent. I think he could be part of the future. I think John Armstrong is really, I mean, I think John's got it down. I mean, everything he's put on paper. I've been to Dallas 15, 20 times. I've read the Warren hearings, all 26 volumes, 4.2 million words, something like that. Anyway, what a waste of time that was. But, you know, I think that Armstrong's close. I think that other guys are knocking on the door, but you know, it all has to come around to realizing there's Harvey and Lee, and that's what a lot of guys can't do, because it puts a hole in their story, and they don't know how to make up for that hole. But outside of that, I think the research community is hungry and young, and except for that guy that used to be with the NSA that was at that meeting with us, and I won't mention his name, and neither will you. In San Francisco, I think we're all pretty good, because except for him and one other guy in the room, I think everybody was on the same. We were all on the same page. I think there were two guys in there that were, how can I put this? They were on the other side of the other team. You hear where I'm coming from on that one?
Sorry, we got a bad connection. I can't hear you, Pedro.
Exactly. Listen, Leno Sanic, Black Op Radio, Thursdays. I don't know what time zone you're in, what time of the world you listen to the show. You can listen to it live. You can listen to it delayed. You can listen to it archives. You can download it. The bottom line is Black Op Radio, as far as JFK assassination is concerned, this is the premier show. And I thank you so much for your time and having me on, Mr. Len.
Okay, thank you. I'm looking forward to having you on again further on. And it's just a pleasure to talk to you.
All the best, my brother.
Okay, thank you.